And let's take a minute now to consider Katharine Graham, as an exhibit at the New York Historical Society is currently doing. If you're saying, who's Katharine Graham? Well, that's the question that launched the exhibit. It was posed by a white person serving female leaders at the Historical Society who realized the story of the woman once called the most powerful in America was being lost. Warren Buffett said that Katharine Graham, as publisher of the Washington Post, saved the country by publishing the Pentagon Papers that revealed lies about the Vietnam War and encouraging and printing the Watergate investigation. She wasn't always so bold. Here's a description of a young Kay Graham, or Katherine Meyer, her maiden name.
Profoundly shy, profoundly insecure, she was raised as a privileged young woman of her time would be to be an ornament to society, to marry well, to have beautiful children, to engage in genteel good works.
That's Jean Gutierrez, curator of the exhibit, cover story Katharine Graham, CEO. She's speaking at a recent City Space event at member station WBUR here in Boston. We started at the beginning. Katharine Meyer's mother was a rare female journalist, her father a wealthy banker and consultant to presidents who bought the Washington Post in 1933.
And her father, until she got bit by the journalism bug, was not really a big presence in her life. It was journalism that really brought them together.
Well, he got her a job.
He did, yes. So after her graduation, she went out to San Francisco and started covering labor unrest along the docks. She was a very passionate advocate of the labor movement at that time.
This was not at the Washington Post, but then he did get her a job at the Washington Post. Have I got this right? And famously said, well, if it doesn't work, we'll get rid of her.
Yes.
His own daughter.
So a nice vote of support there. Yeah. But yes, she did start at the Washington Post as a copy boy and a messenger in the women's pages.
They were called the women's pages.
They were called the women's pages. And I believe the next slide reflects that.
Okay.
We were looking at slides from the exhibit. There's Katharine conferring with reporters Woodward and Bernstein. There are the dresses she wore to famous balls. We'll have pictures at herenow.org. And by the way, she ultimately, as publisher, changed those women's pages to the style section. But in the beginning, the men made the decisions.
Only a few months after starting at the Washington Post, Katharine Graham met a brilliant but rather volatile young lawyer named Philip Graham. He didn't show a lot of interest in journalism. They had sort of a whirlwind courtship. And when they did marry, he started off their marriage by insisting that he wouldn't touch the horrible hunk of money that his in-laws had. And she was fine with that. She went along with it. But by 1948, control of the Washington Post had passed from the Meyers, Eugene and Agnes, to the Grahams, Phil and Katharine. And he had roughly three times the number of shares that she had, courtesy of her parents. It was really a gift from them to him because, as Eugene Meyer said, and Katharine Graham wrote that she agreed at the time, that no man should be put in the position of working for his wife.
Well, and her father made him the publisher, not her.
Not her.
Even though she had studied journalism.
Yes.
So she became a self-described doormat. She completely dropped her journalism and her aspirations and a devoted wife.
Mm-hmm.
There is a sad ending to that story. Okay. He killed himself.
Yeah.
She ascends to the job. It's viewed with complete skepticism.
Very much so.
So that brings us to this moment.
Exactly.
Up on the screen pops a picture of Katharine Graham in a dazzling mask and gown on the arm of a tuxedo Truman Capote. It's the famed mid-60s black and white ball.
The black and white ball. What happened?
Well, at that point, Katharine Graham had been at the helm of the Post for about 3 years. She had already discovered the aspects of the job that were the most fraught for her. Firing people and hiring people remained highly gendered and very difficult for her throughout her career because she was always portrayed as this very difficult, tyrannical, whimsical woman, and whoever lost their job was the victim of her feminine whims. She had already dealt with the election of 1964, where Lyndon Johnson gave her extraordinary access to his campaign, hoping that her personal support would translate into an official endorsement from the Post. But she wrote that she'd inherited a policy of non-endorsement, and she didn't have quite the gumption to do any independent thinking yet. But come 1966, Truman Capote, who's, you know, riding this wild whirlwind of celebrity and bestsellerdom with the publication of In Cold Blood, calls up Katharine Graham and he says, "Honey, I've just decided you're depressed and need cheering up, so I'm going to give you a party." And she's on the end of the phone saying, "What are you talking about?"
It was the party of the century.
It was the party of the century, as Gloria Steinem said, as she wrote about in Vogue, because what it really translated to was an opportunity for Katharine Graham to emerge onto the national stage with Hollywood, with the fashion people, with the literati, with the New York intellectuals, with society, with European aristocrats, all of whom Truman Capote drew together and put her in the center of it. This party was hyped for months. But then she also is able to take that principle behind the black and white ball and make it her own. And so her parties afterwards became very legendary for bringing together all these very different but very interesting people. George Shultz, the former Secretary of State, talked about how much that impacted her influence in Washington because she became a convener of people who had interesting things to say.
Well, and it seemed to help her find the backbone that she always had,
yes.
It would seem.
It's a backbone Katharine Graham would need. Here I'm going to heavily synopsize our conversation with Jean Gutierrez, curator of the Katharine Graham exhibit at the New York Historical Society, because we wandered off into some wild territory, including how when Daniel Ellsberg revealed he had the Pentagon Papers, which revealed the lies about the Vietnam War, it was in a press conference on the porch that would later be my home in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Well, anyway, the New York Times printed some of the damning documents, but the Nixon administration sued, the case went to the Supreme Court. Then Katharine Graham ordered her paper, The Washington Post, to print all of the Pentagon Papers. The Nixon administration issued an injunction. She also gave the green light to reporting on the Watergate scandal. That's when Nixon ordered his minions to break into Democratic National Headquarters in the Watergate complex. Well, the court ultimately ruled against an injunction. Nixon would later step down. But for 15 days in America, a free press was told it couldn't be free. And Katharine Graham defied that.
And there was a profound financial risk because in 1971, they were preparing for their first public stock offering. So if she had, or if anyone at the Post had been hit with a criminal charge, well, that throws a giant monkey wrench into your public stock offering. And the Post at this point was growing beyond a small family paper into a larger media corporation with radio stations, with television stations. Well, you can't hold a radio license or a television license if you have a felony conviction. Those very lucrative properties would be stripped from the Washington Post. And that was a threat that the Nixon administration dangled when then Attorney General John Ashcroft made his infamous threat that Katie Graham's going to get her tit caught in a big fat ringer.
Yes, he said that.
He really did.
So this is the most powerful woman in America after those decisions. You show all those dresses. Did you ever hesitate? Dresses when she also took down a president?
Exactly. Well, part of what we do at the Center for Women's History is we try to tell an unexpected story. And part of the story with women's power is a lot of the avenues that women use to access power are discounted because they're not necessarily the same ones that men use. You know, the power of sociability, you know, the power of bringing people together, the power of hospitality, the power of fashion, you know, the message that you send with your clothes. After the black and white ball, Katharine Graham became fairly irregular in the fashion press. And so that kind of thing, you know, that's not the kind of power that you think of when you think of a newspaper owner, of someone who's really got their fingers on the pulse of what's going on in American politics and business and journalism. But that doesn't mean it's not real.
It is powerful.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's Jean Gutierrez, curator of the exhibit Cover Story, Katharine Graham, CEO at the New York Historical Society. And by the way, in 1976, Graham also faced a bruising labor dispute with typesetters who hung her in effigy and walked on a contract offer. She replaced them with black, Vietnamese, and female workers who previously couldn't get into the all-white, all-male union. She saw it as a failure, others a shining moment. Katharine Graham died in 2001 at 84.